All right, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Yaron Brooks Show, our episode number 9 of our news briefing. Glad to see you all are still with me. This is a daily show. Today's the 21st of December, approaching Christmas. Merry Christmas, everybody. Unfortunately, Blog Talk Radio is not working, so I don't know why. Once in a while, Blog Talk does this. But we are here on, to compensate, we're on Facebook, we're on YouTube, and we're even on Periscope. So welcome to everybody who's here. And we're going to continue without Blog Talk. We'll put up the audio later from the audio we get out of Facebook and YouTube. Okay, so I've got a bunch of stuff. The downside of this is no phone calls today. I don't have a phone number, so I apologize that it's in kind of the... I advertised the calls, but no calls today. So I'll try to take, if there are any substantial questions, I'll try to take them on the chat to the extent that I can keep track of them. Otherwise, we'll do a quick show and... that's good. I'm told that my shows are too long anyway. All right, here it goes. First story, I want to follow up on a couple of stories from yesterday and even the day before. And the first one is this, the tariffs placed on Bombardier by the Trump administration at the bequest of Boeing. So Boeing asked the Trump administration to put tariffs on Bombardier because Bombardier gets subsidies from the Canadian government. We talked about yesterday a little bit about the fact that, this is the worst kind of cronyism. And of course, Boeing gets all kinds of subsidies from the U.S. government. Well, today I discovered what's really going on, why it is that Boeing was so insistent on taking out Bombardier, because Bombardier, the Canadian company, actually is not a competitor, a direct competitor to Boeing. But today, on Reuters and on a bunch of other newspapers and other places, it was announced that Boeing is in talks with Embraer, and I'm probably not pronouncing that exactly right, Embraer, which is a Brazilian maker of jet airplanes. And that the Brazilian government, who has veto over any sale or any major transaction involving Embraer, is supportive of the idea that Boeing take Embraer over. Now, guess who's the number one competitor of Embraer? I'm going to give you a little bit of time to think about this because this is a complicated question, right? Well, of course, it's Bombardier, right? So basically what Boeing's doing is it is sabotaging the competitor of the company that it is now announced it is in negotiations to purchase. Now, does Embraer get subsidies from Brazilian government? Does anybody want to take a bet about that one? Well, of course they get subsidies from the Brazilian government. That's the nature of the Brazilian economy. So here we are, Bombardier and Embraer are fighting, on competing. They're competing on 70 to 100 seat regional kind of jets. And Boeing wants that market. Now, one of the reasons I understand that Boeing wants that market, and this just, it just gets, is because Airbus has recently made an investment in Bombardier. Airbus, of course, is the number one competitor to Boeing. So you've got cronyism upon cronyism upon cronyism. It's just absurd. You can see it playing out in the newspapers. You can see it playing out in plain sight. The swamp is alive. The swamp is fully functional. It is out there kind of, destroying whatever's left of the free market system in the United States of America. So, and Boeing is a big participant in this, and just horrible. So, Today, just another piece of the puzzle falling into line about why all these things are happening. We will see. I mean, Brazil is quite excited about this. I'm not sure what's going on in terms of their particular incentives. Brazil, one of the most corrupt governments in the world. And here's an interesting, the final paragraph in the Reuters releases. Boeing is willing to take steps to protect Embraer's brand management and jobs to help entice the government, and is also willing to structure a deal to protect the government's interest in Embraer's defense business. I guess Embraer also does defense. So there you go. And here it is, Boeing, objecting to some subsidies Bombardier might have received from the Canadian government. Really discourages you when this is the quality of the business people who are supposed to be fighting for freedom. They're supposed to be fighting for capitalism. These are capitalists. These are business people. They're supposed to know how this system functions, and all they do is make it more status, give the politicians more and more and more ammunition to ultimately regulate and control them even more. All right. Just another follow-up story about from yesterday. We discussed yesterday the UN was going to vote condemn the United States for declaring that it would move its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and to condemn the United States for declaring Jerusalem the capital of Israel. So the vote was held today, and Trump threatened all these countries, made phone calls, basically told them that if they voted, they wouldn't get any foreign aid. And the Israelis, of course, lobbied. Well, it didn't work. The vote was, I don't have the drum roll, 128 nations in favor of condemning the United States, 9 against, 128-9. And 35 abstentions. Now, who are the 9 who are against? Who are the 9 allies of the United States and allies of Israel? I mean, this is fascinating. Togo, the Marshall Islands, Nauru, Micronesia, Palau. Now, all 5, I think, are South Pacific island nations. So I don't know what leverage the United States and Israel have on these South Pacific island nations. Actually, I do know. I'll tell you in a minute what I suspect. The other 2 nations were Honduras and Guatemala. And, of course, Israel in the United States, that makes up 9 votes who were against. Now, all of these countries, Togo, Marshall Islands, Nauru, Micronesia, Palau, Honduras, and Guatemala, I believe all of them receive military support from the Israelis. They all get weapons from Israel. Just my speculation. I have no inside information that I can talk about anyway. No, I have no inside information, but that is my suspicion. Abstentions was a little interesting. Canada abstained. That's a shock. I would have been sure that Canada would have voted in favor, given. So I don't know what was going on. Something's going on in the background in Canada. I don't know. That's interesting. Mexico, Argentina, Poland, and the Philippines. So those are among the 35 abstentions. By the way, a bunch of countries just didn't show up for the vote. They didn't want to upset anybody. They didn't want to vote for. They didn't want against. They didn't even want to abstain. So they just stayed home. Who voted for this? Well, a bunch of United States allies like France and Britain and pretty much everybody, right? 129 nations. So pretty much everybody else, including 2 countries that get over $1 billion in foreign aid from the United States every year, which is Egypt and Jordan, also voted against the United States. So it'll be interesting to see if Trump follows this up with an actual freezing of their support. I'm willing to put a lot of money on the table to say that won't happen. Nikki Haley, who I kind of usually like, she's you know, of all the Republicans, she's not bad. She makes some good statements once in a while in the UN. So she said she really appreciates the countries that voted against, you know, Nauru and Palau and Micronesia. I don't think I'm even pronouncing their names right. The important countries, you know, the countries that really matter in the world. You know, and Haley was, you know, all over the place condemning everybody. The United States will remember this day in which it was singled out for attacking the General Assembly for the very act of exercising our right of a sovereign nation. I mean, that would be a pretty good statement if it wasn't the United Nations. What is she doing there? What are we doing there? Why are we even participating? She continues to say, we will remember it when we are once again called upon to make the world's largest contribution to the United Nations. And we will remember it when so many countries come calling on us, as they so often do, to pay even more and use our influence for their benefit. All right. She said it. Trump supported it. Can we remember this when the check comes due? Can we condemn the Trump administration for not living up to this promise and actually paying their dues to the UN and supporting all these countries? Unbelievable. Anyway, this is a corrupt institution, pathetic institution that we should not be a part of. And the very idea that we are, I think, condemns us to these, how would you call this, charade of, I mean, just lunacy, just crazy. So demeaning to the United States. The United States of America has to have Palau voting for it to get 9 votes. Even South Korea and Taiwan, countries that the United States is committing to defending if they're attacked, voted against the United States. So it's just... All right. Let's see. Again, I said yesterday, we should just be leaving and we should just be getting out of there. And should have done it long, long time ago. It's been an abomination from day one. All right. UN vote. Okay. Here's an interesting one, which I just found out today, but it's a Monday article. And this is good for a number of things I want to point out here. It's a Politico piece that was published a few days ago. And I don't know if you guys consider Politico mainstream media or not. I don't know. It's hard for me to track what is considered and what is not. But it's a piece of really, really good investigative journalism. So whether this is mainstream or not, it's good investigative journalism. I read it. It seems credible, well-sourced, lots of reinforcing, and it kind of what's interesting too is like the Wall Street Journal took a couple of days to make sure this was all legit, and then today ran a story about it, so it's got now kind of the backing of the Wall Street Journal, again, mainstream media. It's a good example of the kind of investigative journalism that we wouldn't have if not for well-funded major journalistic institutions. And it's anti-Obama. This is not published in Breitbart. It was not published in, Fox. This is a major story condemning the Obama administration with regard to Iran and Hezbollah. It's striking in how negative it is, but what's really striking is what actually happened. I mean, but it's also interesting in terms of evaluating whether somebody, I mean, a number of people have asked me this last week, how do I evaluate the stories? Where do you look for news? And so on. And this is a good example. So you read this piece, it's well documented, it has multiple sources, some, not all the sources, but some of the sources are named, linked to their statements or linked to testimony they made, let's say in front of Congress and things like that. Names are named in terms of, it's very, very detailed. It's you can check to see if the things that they're saying happened, because many of them are in the public domain. So it's really good piece. And then you see the opposition. That's another indication of whether something is legit. So the opposition is basically hysterical. Like the left, all the Obama allies are just going nuts about this. And they're calling it poorly sourced, non-story. That to me indicates that they're panicking and that they have nothing here. Because if you read the article, no, this is a real story. You might disagree. You might think what the Obama administration did was right, but you can't say it's a non-story. So the fact that the left is so panicky, the fact that the media is so apoplectic, and the fact that the Wall Street Journal is giving this a thumbs up, so it's got some backing from other journalists who've looked at it carefully, and the journalists are really citing this piece. And again, all fact-based, really, this is the kind of journalism one craves for, and the kind of journalism I look for, and the kind of journalism I trust, because, you know, it's got all signs of being true and a bunch of other things that are not. What is the story itself? Well, the story itself is that the DEA and a bunch of other U.S. law enforcement agencies started an investigation in 2008 about the links of Hezbollah with organized crime, both in terms of drugs, stolen cars, money laundering, and a bunch of other criminal activity, that Hezbollah was basically funding itself by creating a massive international criminal network that went from Lebanon to Europe to Venezuela to the United States, significant contacts with the Russians. And that this network basically provided Hezbollah with over $1 billion a year from weapons trafficking, money laundering, drug smuggling, and other criminal activities. And that, of course, we know that this money was funneled to make weapons and build weapons and to help it fight, more recently, to help it fight on the side of Assad in the Syrian war, but in generally to engage in its terrorist activities. Hezbollah has strong links in South America, has had for a long time. If you remember, I did a show, one of the stories I talked about in one of my previous shows was about the Hezbollah, an Iranian bombing of the Israeli Jewish community center, of the Jewish community center in Argentina. They had a whole network of people in Argentina. They were well connected politically, and it turned out ultimately they were bribing the president. The Iranians were bribing the president of Argentina. So Iran, particularly its paramilitary Quds forces, Hezbollah, have a strong, strong base and supposedly even training facilities in places like Venezuela, in the past at least, in Colombia and in Argentina. And you've been using drug trafficking for a long time in order to finance and fund their terrorist activities. So these agencies actually ran a detailed operation starting before Obama was elected and really had key people for the Hezbollah, key people from its criminal network all over the world, arrested in various locations around the world. And at every opportunity, the Justice Department and the State Department intervened on behalf of Hezbollah, on behalf of letting these people go, releasing them, not extraditing them to the United States. We're talking about people who had been indicted in the United States, secret indictments and public indictments, and yet were released by American allies at the request of the American State Department and Justice Department. Whether it was Colombia who'd arrested a Syrian-born Venezuelan who was shipping tons of cocaine to the U.S. and then providing that money back to Hezbollah. And he was extradited instead of to the United States, to Venezuela, where, of course, he was released. Whether it's the another guy who was arrested in, what was it, Aruba, and a huge operator in trafficking, and who then mysteriously the Netherlands intervened. Aruba is, I think, was a Netherland colony, maybe still is, I don't know. And the Netherlands intervened, nobody knows exactly why, and they returned, and he also was returned to Venezuela. So the link between the Venezuelan government, Hezbollah, all this stuff, unbelievable. And the question is why? And the reasons in the article, the reasons are pretty explicit. I mean, the Obama administration officials, in a sense, without admitting it, admit it. All of this was done not to upset the Iranians, because the signature program of the Obama administration during that period was the Iranian nuclear deal. So they were willing to basically forgo all the investigations of Hezbollah. They were willing to forgo, you know, arresting major criminals who are on indictment in the United States, all in the name of appeasing the Iranians and cutting a deal with the Iranians. Now, I recommend reading the article because I'm just giving you highlights, but it details in great, great detail, you know, stolen cars in the United States that landed up in Africa through South America, and that the money landed up in the hands of Hezbollah, all kinds of things going on. And again, time and time again, these people, these American law enforcement agents doing a good job going after one of the most brutal, murderous terrorist organizations that exist in the world today, doing their job and being basically blocked at every opportunity by the State Department and by the Justice Department, for whom they work, right? That's who they work for. It's pretty unbelievable. The project was called Project Cassandra. This is a story called The Secret Backstory of How Obama Let Hezbollah Off the Hook. It's written by Josh Mayer, and it's excellent. And then if you look then at the kind of Huffington Post hysteria about it and other newspapers hysteria about it, you kind of get the sense of, yeah, this is probably true. Otherwise, they wouldn't be so upset at this. So, look, I don't think this is unusual. I think this happens all the time. But I think it's important for us to, you know, read the details and get a real sense of how bad it really is, I'm sure this is happening right now with the Trump administration with their priorities. It's always about what are your priorities, which might be different from administration to administration. But the manipulation of law and order, of the legal system and law enforcement agencies in order to achieve what are considered broader, bigger goals, it's just disgusting. And it just shows, again, the lack of focus on what is American self-interest, what is American self-interest requires, and a complete dropping of the context. And this is the context. The context is very simple. The United States is the most powerful nation militarily in all of human history. There's not a nation on the planet today that comes even close in terms of the military power the United States has. And yet, with the United Nations and with Iran, we behave as if we are some third-rate country groveling for approval from other countries. And no America first here. No America first at the UN. Certainly not under Obama. Obama's whole emphasis of foreign policy was America last. America last. Now, Trump claims America first, but he ain't acting like it. All right. I recommend the story. Go read it. The secret backstory, how Obama let Hezbollah off the hook by Josh Mayer on in Politico. There's also a story in the Wall Street Journal, actually by the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. So in yesterday's Wall Street Journal editorial board backing the story up. And there's a lot of noise now in Congress about launching an investigation into it. But, you know, Congress investigates anything and everything. And unless you're a businessman, they won't do anything about it. If you're a businessman, they will try to regulate you to death. They'll go after you at every opportunity. So, this is Hezbollah. Hezbollah, just to give you a sense of the connection to America, is Hezbollah was responsible for the death of, I think it was 244 Marines in Beirut in 1983 when they drove a truck bomb into the Marine barracks there. The week before that, they bombed the U.S. Embassy, and I can't remember how many people they killed. During the 1980s, Hezbollah killed lots of Americans in Lebanon. They never suffered any consequences. Ronald Reagan did nothing to curb their influence. From day one, Hezbollah has been an arm of the Iranian government. And the Reagan administration knew this, and they knew that ultimately the Marines were murdered by the Iranians, and they did nothing with regard to Iran. I could just go on and on and on about the sins of Iran and Hezbollah and the impotence of American administrations, one after the other. Not a single thing has been done. Nothing. One of the many, many, many horrible things that have happened. All right, I'm going to end with and just this one thing, and then if you guys have any questions on which chats am I looking at? I'm looking at the YouTube chat and the Facebook chat. If you have any questions there, put them in bold or all cap or something so I can see them, so they pop out from the conversation. Here's a fun fact they learned today. It hit me like, this is real? But it's so cool that I have to share it with you guys. I think you guys will think this is cool. And by the way, this fun fact about the beauty of capitalism was published by another arm of the evil, mainstream media. This was published in the Washington Post. It turns out that insurance companies actually hire private firefighters who go to the homes of the people who have insurance with these companies and protect those homes. They do different things. They clear brush around the home. They install sprinkler systems when necessary, special sprinkler systems that create a wet environment so the fire is less likely. They help the homeowners put in the furniture that may be outside in the yard so their furniture doesn't catch fire. They put a special fire protective gel, I guess, on certain parts of it. They clear out the gutters. They do the things that are necessary, and they work with the regular fire departments. But they are sent and paid for by private insurance companies to the specific homes of the people who have insurance. Now, that is so cool. So cool. Now, this is primarily prevalent in California. It turns out that this has always been done, although, the government has taken over more and more firefighting, this was crowded out. So this goes back to 1796, the story says, when most fire departments were private, or all fire departments were private. And then slowly they've been pushed out by public fire departments. But it turns out that these private firefighters still exist. They're hired by insurance companies, and they're sent to fight this. This is a fascinating story. Under insurance firms dispatch private firefighters in California. So the latest fires in California, where 1,000 buildings have burnt and where there's a lot of very wealthy homes are in danger, A lot of those homes are protected by or insured by insurance companies that provide this service, and they are significant numbers. I think 11 trucks, Chubb, the insurance company Chubb, sent out 11 trucks. The trucks look like fire trucks, regular fire trucks. Two firefighters in each truck to about 500 homes in Santa Barbara and Ventura counties to help them protect them from the fires. And then in addition, that's just one insurance company. There's some other insurance companies that do the same thing. So cool, good news, capitalism, elements of capitalism still alive and well. And who said that private enterprise can't solve the problems that we face? All right, we've got somebody wrote an all-cap question. Should the U.S. withdraw from the U.N., or is the U.S. veto in the Security Council the only way to prevent bad actors using the U.N. to further their own aim? I answered this question yesterday. Absolutely, the United States should withdraw from the U.N. The very fact that the United States sanctions the existence of the U.N., sanctions the Security Council, in which not only the United States has a veto, but so does Russia and China, and so did the Soviet Union, is an abomination. It is a show of our weakness. It is a projection of our weakness to the world. We should leave the United States. We should declare unilaterally that the United States will do everything in its power to secure its own self-interest, a true America First foreign policy. It should tell the United Nations that it could do whatever the hell it wants. But if it does anything that the United States views as a threat to itself, it will crush that initiative. It will crush whatever the hell they do. So again, the context is we, A, are better than 99% of the countries in the UN, and we should declare so. We should declare unequivocally that freedom is better than slavery, that the United States is better than Saudi Arabia, that Syria has no right to vote on whether the United States should or shouldn't do anything. It's irrelevant. Syria is not a legitimate country. We should declare Venezuela to be an illegitimate country. We should declare all these regimes as illegitimate and therefore have no say, zero say in what the United States does or does not do. Andy asked, don't we have an obligation to stop threats before they build up to the point that they threaten existence? Okay, if we do, if you can legitimately, objectively show that a threat exists out there that might be a threat to our existence, and that is a tough threshold. I don't believe it's easy to show that. Then absolutely, I believe in preemptive war. You know, go to Iran, establish an embargo, get your allies to support you, and those who don't support you are not your allies. And if an embargo doesn't work, crush them militarily. I'm all for projecting American military in powerful ways across the world. That doesn't mean having troops in 120 nations. We should bring them all home and project force to where we need to project force to. Okay, another question about this. Justice on the global stage, according to a lot of academia, is egalitarianism on the global stage. I've heard professors make concessions for places like Palestine to kill civilians for the sake of egalitarianism. Yes, that's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting and should be condemned. And these professors should be fired. There's no analysis of rights or other moral codes. The answer to them is simple. America needs to be brought down. That's right. The worst thing, the thing that that these professors and many countries around the world do most is they hate America. America needs to start behaving, or should one day start behaving, not under Trump and not under Obama and not under Bush and not under anybody. But one day when America rediscovers its founding principles, rediscovers the idea of individual rights, it must declare that to the world. It must declare the superiority of its political system to the world. It should declare the barbarism of the political systems of so many countries in the world. It should shut down its embassies in many of those countries and then use its military and diplomatic power to destroy legitimate objective threats to the United States, and two, I'm not advocating using military power for number two, to secure free trade all over the world. instead of Trump going around the world raising tariffs and accusing China of this or that or that, we should be working to put pressure on countries everywhere in the world to stop subsidizing, to stop putting tariffs on. And that one of the best ways to do that is by unilaterally lowering our own tariffs to zero and then declaring to the world that, A, we will protect trade routes, and B, we expect them to do the same thing, i.e. lower tariffs to zero, stop subsidizing their businesses. But we have to lead by example. So I am, when it comes to trade, I am a globalist and a proud globalist. If you want to call me a globalist, please do. When it comes to trade, I'm a globalist. Tariffs are a tax. It is stunning to me that people who claim to be pro-freedom, when it comes to this tax, are pro-taxation. So if you're for raising taxes in America, then that's what tariffs mean. So, this is the phenomena of Trump blindness and Trump mindlessness. Tariffs are never in your self-interest. And again, tariffs are just a tax. And why on your own citizens, they just raise the cost of living for your own people. Why would you want to do that? It is not. So please go around the web and let people know that when it comes to trade, I am a globalist and a proud one. Let's see. All right. I'm not even going to even answer that question. All right. Thank you all. This is Yaron's news briefing. I think we're going to stick with the name. I like the name. It's my news briefing. That's what it is. You know, no claim to be speaking for, you know, this is the definitive word of objectivism. This is Yaron reviewing the news for you, briefing you on what I think are the important news stories or interesting or things that I'm interested in, and presenting you with my views on the news, you know, educated by an objectivist perspective. So thank you, guys. Have a great evening. I'll be back with the Yaron Brooks Show on Saturday for The Blaze at noon Eastern Time. Don't miss that show. And the best way to listen to that show, where you get the best quality and everything else, is to do it on theblaze.com/radio when the show is going on. So listen live on theblaze.com/radio. Have a great night, everybody. Talk to you on Saturday.